Jesus tells us to take up our cross and follow him. You're listening to Crosswalk with Pastor Steve Winery. Crosswalk is the radio ministry of Calvary Chapel Tri-Cities, and it is our aim to lead you to the cross through the teaching of God's Word.
Come break our culture, tear down our pride. Lord, take your church and purify. Oh, we are ready to stand in your love. Come, King Jesus, deliver us. Oh, my King is coming. Restless hearts, be still.
Today's Crosswalk is pre-recorded from Truth Set Free.
Well, hello, you guys. How are you? My name is Matt Lewis. I'm here with Pastor Steve Winery. We're coming to you live from Calvary Chapel Tri-Cities in Kennewick, Washington. If you guys have questions for Pastor Steve, I have an email behind me, crosswalkradio@gmail.com. You guys can also voicemail or leave a text message, 707-872-7677. There's an acronym. It's 707-87-CROSS. That helps you remember. I have a bunch of stuff going on, and so one of the things I want to tell you, if you don't already know, is that we have an app, and so there's so many things going on here, I can't announce them to you all. Even on a Sunday morning, you're getting a sliver of the amount of stuff and ministries that are going on. So download our app. There's a events button, and there's a bulletin button with weekly updates. That's the best way to keep track of everything that's going on here, and for any updates. There you go. Anything else you got?
Nope.
All right, we're going to jump in here because we got a lot of questions. All right, here's my first one. Okay, 10-year-old, just for your information. And this is actually a great question. Can angels in heaven die? And if they can, do they respawn right away like in Minecraft or Fortnite? Okay. If I'm 10 years old, I have this question.
Yes, that's a good question. Okay, Dirk, first off, death in the Bible is different than probably how you're thinking about it. So usually when we think about death, we think about ceasing to exist. And so the Bible doesn't teach that. What the Bible teaches is that we change places when we die. And so when a person dies, they leave their body, and their body either goes to a place of judgment, or excuse me, their spirit either goes to a place of judgment or it goes to heaven with God. Okay? And so it's one of those two things. But the person doesn't cease to exist. Their body is empty at that point. Okay, so that's physical death. And then the Bible talks about spiritual death. And spiritual death, there's spiritual death of people here on the earth, and that means that they're separated from God. And then there's the ultimate spiritual death, which the Bible calls the second death, and that means that they're separated from God forever in the lake of fire. Okay, and so, yes, angels in heaven die, and it's the bad ones. And so what happens with them is they are placed in the lake of fire, and they're separated from God forever. And the proof text on that is in Matthew chapter 25, where Jesus is talking to people who are going to be judged because of their sin. And he says, then he will also say to those on the left hand, depart from me, you cursed, into the everlasting fire prepared for the devil and his angels. And that's talking about hell. And then he gives the reasons why. And so the lake of fire was prepared for the devil and his angels. And when they are cast in there, that's where they'll stay for the rest of eternity. And they'll be separated from God and from the rest of us forever. And so those are the angels that die, and the death there is called the second death, but they don't cease to exist. They're just in a place, separated from God forever. And so, no, they don't respond right away like in Minecraft or Fortnite. So there you go, Ben.
There you go. And not to confuse Mr. Dirk, but you know the times when it says that, you know, I was delayed because, you know, presumably Gabriel, but Gabriel was delayed however many days because he's fighting with another angel to on his way to give Daniel a message, or over the body of Moses, like it says in Jude. How does that work? Like, they're fighting, but they can't die. Is, you know, I think of this respawn situation where it's like a video right, game. Yeah. It's like they're punching each other. They got swords of lightning, and they're just...
I have no idea.
Just a wild thought.
Yeah, I have no idea how that works. In Revelation chapter 12, it says that Michael and his angels drive out Satan and his angels. And so there's something going on there where they're getting beat up. So apparently angels can get beat up. They just don't die.
Yeah. There you go. All right. Yeah. Thanks, Dirk. Appreciate your question, man.
Yeah.
Okay, here's my next one. And this is what it says regarding elders and deacons. Can you explain the biblical responsibilities for elders and deacons, ? Like specifically what their responsibilities look like in day-to-day church? And so pastoral epistles, we have qualifications, we have all those things. Practically speaking, what do elders and deacons do? What's their responsibilities in a local church?
Okay, let me define terms first off. Okay. You know, there's what we do biblically, or what the Bible teaches biblically, and then there is what we do in churches as far as bylaws and accountability goes and that kind of stuff. So first I'm going to take you to Acts chapter 20. And in verse 17, it says, "From Miletus he sent to Ephesus and called for the elders of the church." Okay. And then when he's talking to these guys, he says, "Therefore, take heed to yourselves," in verse 28, "and to all the flock among which the Holy Spirit has made you overseers to shepherd the church of God, which he purchased with his own blood." And so when you're talking about high church leadership, the terms that are used are elder, which is presbyteros in Greek. That's where we get our word presbytery or Presbyterianism. And then over in verse 28, overseer is a term that in Greek is episkopos. And that's where you get the term for Episcopalian. King Jimmy translates that bishop. A bishop, and then in this passage, the term shepherd is in Greek. It's the verb form of poimen, which means pastor. It's the term for pastor. Shepherd and pastor are the same thing. So this is the first point that I want to make with you. When Paul is addressing the elders at Ephesus, he's talking to guys who are elders and who are overseers. That's usually the translation. In modern terms, and pastors. And all three terms are used for these guys. So the first point I want to make is that those three terms are used for the same guy, basically, and they describe different aspects of his ministry. One of them is that an elder or presbyteros is supposed to be somebody who is elder. And what it means is somebody who's wise and who is older in the Lord and is somebody who's a mature follower of Jesus Christ, okay?
So not necessarily old biologically, but just a mature believer.
Yeah, mature believer. And then when you're talking about the term for overseer, that doesn't describe his character, that describes his job. And his job is to oversee the church. And then when you're talking about pastor, that also is speaking about his job, but it's in the context of an empathy towards the sheep of God, basically. Okay, and so when you look at the qualifications for an elder, a great place to look is in 1 Timothy chapter 3, and this again is talking about what we would call pastors in the passage, and so you see that he's to be blameless, husband of one wife, temperate, sober-minded, of good behavior, hospitable, able to teach, not addicted to wine, not violent, not greedy for money, but gentle, not quarrelsome, not covetous. Gentle, by the way, means fair. One who rules his own house well, and not a novice. Okay, and so those are qualifications for basically what we would call a pastor. And then deacons, and actually deaconesses, are in the same passage in verses 8 through 13. And so it talks about deacons need to be reverent, not double-tongued. That means they're not gossipers, not given to much wine. Again, the whole idea of not a drunk, basically, not somebody who drinks in that sense. Not greedy for money, holding the mystery of faith with a pure conscience. And they need to be tested. And they need to serve. And there, it goes on, it says their wives. It's actually in Greek, the women. And there were no qualifications for a pastor's or a bishop's wife. And why would there be qualifications for a deacon's wife if there's no qualifications for a bishop's wife? And so this most likely is talking about female deacons. And the Bible clearly teaches Phoebe, for example, is called a deaconess in Scripture, in the book of Romans. In any case, it says they need to be reverent, not slanderers. And again, that's that idea of somebody who's a gossip, temperate, faithful in all things. And then the deacons need to be the husbands of one wife, talking about the male deacons, obviously, and their children, their own houses need to be ruled well, and so on. Okay, so when you're going through the Bible, deacons basically are kind of running the physical aspects of the church. And so when you first see them pop up in the Bible, it's in the book of Acts, and it's in a situation where there was a daily distribution to widows, and some of the widows were being overlooked. And so the apostles say, we're not going to leave the word of God in prayer to serve tables. And so we need to appoint somebody over these matters. And so that's where you see the biblical definition of a deacon. When you're talking about elders in the Bible, specifically the elders at Ephesus, most likely what you're talking about is a bunch of Bible study teachers, but home Bible study leaders, because that's how the church was set up in first century times. Jesus, when he's talking to the seven churches in Asia, talks to one man in each one of the churches, and he's called the messenger of the church. Some of our translations translate that the angel of the church, but the term angel and messenger, actually messenger is the translation of the term angelos in Greek, which is where we get our term angel. Angel's a transliteration. And so John the Baptist, for example, was called an angel or a messenger, an angelos or a messenger. And so the messenger of the church, there's just one when Jesus is addressing them at the end of the first century. And so that's normative for churches. Okay, so all that said, that's the biblical stuff that we're talking about. When I am looking at elders in my fellowship, 1 Timothy chapter 3, verses 1 through 7 is my go-to passage, because even though they may not be pastors in the context of my bylaws, they still are involved in the oversight of the church, and they need to meet these qualifications in that passage. And so that's what I'm looking for as far as qualifications go. As far as the church goes and what goes on around here, it's kind of like the way I treat my staff guys. And so I have a number of pastors on staff here, and they are on staff so that we can minister effectively to as many people as we possibly can. And they are subject to me. And so that means that basically I'm a real hands-off guy in the sense that I don't run everybody. I'm not a micromanager. But I still get I still get a say in what everybody's doing, and so this works really well when everybody figures that out. I have over the years run into guys who like to make up their own little kingdoms and stuff, and that doesn't work well because I'm getting judged for everything that they do, and I'm not doing that. And so there's a mutual submission that goes on. So I expect guys to serve Jesus and get their stuff done, and I still have a say in what's going on. In other words, I can walk into Matt's office and go, "What are you doing? Yeah, what's happening?" I can do the Doge thing. Give me five things that you did last week, and he's accountable to me.
Yeah.
And so the elders, but at the very same time, we have meetings once a week, generally speaking, where we're sitting in an office basically talking with each other. We're all friends. And so we're talking with each other about what's going on as far as the ministry goes. And they ask me questions and I give answers. And everybody comes up with ideas on things, how things should be handled. And there's a lot of communal stuff that is happening in that. There's a mutual submission one to another. And that's the way that it goes in our board meetings too. So I've got guys who are on the board and they come in and I have everybody who's in charge of ministries report to them what's been going on. And then we talk about church business, go over the finances for accountability and that kind of thing. but they do not run the church. There's not the ability to do that. These guys are all working, and the church is specifically a business in and of itself. And so really the business aspect of what happens at the church happened with me and my guys on staff. But these guys are there for outside eyes, basically, and to keep the people on staff accountable, to see what's going on with the finances and all of that kind of stuff. As far as what they're accountable for, they have a fiduciary responsibility to the corporation, which means that they have to care about the church and they have a responsibility to make sure that they promote the well-being of the fellowship. And so they're accountable before God to be truthful and righteous in their actions, and they don't get to do things that are going to tear the church apart. And so basically there's that. And the other thing is I expect them to obviously tell me the truth, and you know, we talk things out when we're going through and talking about issues. The standard in my board is unanimous decisions. If there's one of my elders that's iffy about something that is being proposed, then usually what ends up happening is I table it and until the next meeting. We all pray about it, and then we come back and we look at those things. And so, you know, that's kind of how that goes. We rotate our elders. That's part of our bylaws. And so, generally speaking, an elder is on my board for 2 years. And I have guys that are, you know, they're kind of offset. So I've always got some new elders on the board.
So one of the things that confused me in navigating this process is that you already went through, there's one term for elder. It could be bishop, it could be pastor, it could be shepherd. And then, you know, you have a group of elders, but like you explained, your associate pastors kind of fill the biblical role, elders fill the business, finances, accountability, outside look, all that stuff. For the different types of church government, you know, mm-hmm. Calvary, Moses model versus Presbyterian versus whatever, Catholic, you know, all the different types of church government. If you were set up different, or let me phrase it like this. Let's say you're a smaller church and your elders are doing more of the associate pastor work. Uh-huh. How does that work for their responsibilities as far as maybe they don't work here and have an office at church, but they're more of an elder in the biblical role as right. far as talking to people and dealing with gossip and
yeah.
church ministry.
And so what's happened with our church is the role of elder has evolved over time.
Right.
And so when we were a small church, then my elders, because everybody was working, I was right. working outside the church also. And so the elders filled a more biblical role in that they came down and, you know, they would help out with talking with people and just doing some hands-on stuff as far as the church went to, again, be able to minister to as many people as possible. And what's happened over the years is, generally speaking, I've taken my pastors from my elder board. And so if I'm gonna put a guy on staff, then that's the place, my elders, my deacons are the places that I'm looking to put a guy on staff. And as soon as that happens, they go off the elder board.
Right.
And the reason for that is because of conflict of interest. We vote on, you know, we determine salaries. And so we vote on salaries and things like that. And so obviously we don't want a bunch of guys voting on their own salaries. That would be like the United States Congress.
Yeah. We'd have to send in Doge.
Yeah.
Hey, what, when you were smaller, how did you do that? When you was you and let's just say Mitch or whatever, and then you had the elders, how'd you run that?
Well, the way I ran it was actually, when I changed the way that I ran it, it was when I had one of my elders on my board, or actually on my staff, and we were going to do salaries. And as soon as that happened, I realized, you know, obviously I'm the head elder, and that's how our bylaws are set up. And so I always vote on these things. And then my assistant pastor had also been on the elder board. He still was on the elder board. And we were looking at voting for salaries, and I went, whoa, yeah. You can't do that. And so that's when I told him, you're fired as an elder, basically. And you know, just joking around. He wasn't obviously fired, but I had to get him off the board so that he wasn't voting on his own salary. So it happened pretty quickly. So so as far as the distinction there, it happened pretty quickly because within, it was probably within 3, maybe 4 years, I had a guy on staff as an assistant pastor.
Okay, so the other thing I think of that comes up is how, and obviously you know this way better than me, but what I've seen is how crucial it is to pick elders, depending on if you're a small church, probably even more if you're a small church than what you have. And a lot of guys, I've seen it like this. Actually, I've seen it said like this from pastors. Well, that's a qualifications, Matt, but who can meet all of those? And so it's almost like they're making excuses for, well, they don't have all of that, but this is the guy I have. And then you end up in a position where your elders, depending on your church government, and that's another Bible study in and of itself,
right, yeah.
But they can really make or break your church as far as issues, as far as division, as far as all that stuff. So could you just speak to that for a moment?
Yeah, Paul, later on in Timothy, talks about not laying hands suddenly on anybody. It's in 1 Timothy chapter 5 and verse 22. Do not lay hands on anyone hastily, nor share in other people's sins. Keep yourself pure. Then he goes on and he says, some men's sins are clearly evident, preceding them to judgment, but those of some men follow later. Likewise, the good works of some are clearly evident, and those that are otherwise cannot be hidden. And again, he's talking about somebody who has good conduct and a good character. And one of the things about putting somebody in leadership is it's really easy to stick somebody in leadership. It's a whole lot harder to get them out.
Right.
And
messier.
Yeah, messier. And that's laying hands on someone is the idea of giving them authority in the church. And so you watch people for a while. And so that, you know, that whole thing with settling for somebody that doesn't meet the qualifications. You know, the qualifications in 1 Timothy 3 are not difficult. They're not qualifications that are a step above or something. Those are the that's a description of a mature believer. And that's the point of the passage. An elder needs to be a mature believer. And so if he's got, you know, five out of the whole list and the other ones he doesn't have, he's not a mature believer, it would be the point. And so, no, I wouldn't put a guy on that didn't meet these qualifications. I've never had to. And even when our church was small, I've never had to do that. So if I was in a situation where the church was first starting and I'm looking at these issues and I didn't have anybody in my fellowship, then I get another pastor to be on my board.
You mean like from another church?
Yeah, from another church. Get another pastor from another church. If I needed somebody to make it three guys so that it wasn't, you know, me against one of my, you know, my one elder that I have at the church, I'd specifically do that too. So that, and I pick a guy who's wise and a godly man who would tell me no.
Yeah.
No.
Do you have a time frame that you like? Is there a process where you're just waiting and praying over it? Is it more generic than that when you're picking your elders, or
no? It's the qualities that I'm looking for.
And so you look for that in his life, and then when you see it,
you
let me pray about this guy and see.
Yeah, that's what I'm looking for. One of the things that we need to remember about Paul setting up elders for the churches is that many times he's talking to he's dealing with a group of people that are all brand new Christians, and admittedly, many of them came out of Judaism.
That's all the time we have for today. If you have questions for Pastor Steve, please email me at crosswalkradio@gmail.com, or you can leave a voicemail or text message to 707-872-7677. Crosswalk is the radio ministry of Calvary Chapel Tri-Cities in Kennewick, Washington. If you're wanting to know more about what it means to follow Christ, then please contact our church office by phone at 509-736-2086. You can also look us up online at calvary-tricities.org. There you will find a wide variety of Steve's teachings to listen to or to download for free. If you want to join us for church sometime, we're located at 10611 West Clearwater Avenue in Kennewick, Washington. Our Sunday service times are 8:30 and 10:30 a.m. We also meet at 6 p.m. Sundays and 6:30 p.m. Wednesdays in our sanctuary. We hope you have been blessed today and will join us again next time on Crosswalk. Oh,
King is come.